Hey there, Curiosity Builders. I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs, storytellers, visionaries, and changemakers who are on a mission of chasing big ideas, telling epic stories, and leaving living legacies. Whether you're just starting out or have been at this creative and curious life for some time, I hope you learn something new in this podcast and find yourself inspired to break through the barriers that hold you back and keep you stuck from getting your work to work. How do you show up in your work? Do you create work that is true to who you are and what matters to you? These are two questions I've been reflecting on since talking with Ashwin Chacko, a seriously playful illustrator and storyteller based in Dublin, Ireland. Our conversation begins with Ashwin's curiosity about the social interactions that drive culture and the role artists play in our world. He then shares stories of his early years as a child of missionaries, learning critical adaptability skills, and gaining new friends wherever he goes. We talk a lot about making sense of chaos, overcoming fear by telling it no, finding his purpose and calling, and why it's essential to separate yourself from your work. He also teaches us the 4 D's of unlocking any creative blocks you might be facing. Show notes and links to all the good stuff mentioned in this episode can be found at gwtw.co/535. Well, Ashwin, thank you so much for being a guest on Getting Work to Work. Your work and presence just makes me smile and feel hopeful. Thank you for filling the world with so much positivity, possibilities, and hope.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on your show.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what are you endlessly curious about?
So there's this thing that really interests me, which is the social interactions that drive culture. If you think about it, if we look all over history, our cultures are defined by the arts. So you think Baroque, you think Renaissance, you think, you know, the Dark Ages. What's the first picture that comes to your head? Is usually the art that's related to that age. And so I'm fascinated with the idea of how do we as creative people shape the culture we live in today?
That's powerful. How did you discover this, that you were curious about it?
I came across this book by, hopefully I don't butcher his name, Makoto Fujimura. He wrote the book Culture Care. And he really hypothesizes this idea of, what is the role of artists in the world? Mm-hmm. Often we're ostracized, we're on the fringes of culture, but at the same time, we play a vital role in shaping it and curating it and creating care for it and bringing beauty into the world. And so that really set my eyes on that. And I was very aware of that going forward.
Because did you always want to be an artist?
I think so. I've always wanted to draw. I mean, as far back as I can remember, I've always drawn. My mother retells the story of me, age 5 or 6, where I ask her, can I draw for a living? And of course, she chuckles at the time. But, you know, in many ways, that's become a reality now.
That you draw for a living.
Yeah, exactly.
Was that hard to kind of wrap your mind around as you started to like gain recognition and be able to make a living doing that?
I'm not sure if it was hard to wrap around. It's been a consistent journey of continuous pursuit, let's say. Growing up in India, when I thought of being an artist, the idea that came to my head was I'd just be a starving artist. And I had made peace with that fact, you know, like I was like, I'd rather be a starving artist than not do what I love. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's wisdom in what your parents have to say and offer and the people around you. And so I ended up studying visual communications and moved into animation and multimedia. And from there, I hopped into graphic design. And I could incorporate some of my illustration in there. And it was a continuous process. And it was, it's not that like I ever let it go. It just was incorporated in the journey. And then finally, over the last 2 to 3 years, after moving to Dublin, the opportunity was there where I could drop all the other stuff that I needed to make a living and just pursue illustration full time.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's been quite the journey. So I suppose like this is the interesting thing with the digital age. Often we just see the final product. You're seeing the last chapter, not even the last chapter. You're seeing the climax of the artist, maybe. But you haven't seen all the hardships, the many adventures before that transformed the character so that they could get to this place where they've been changed and they've finally reached the destination they were seeking for.
Right. Well, and I think too, there's that pressure of coming out fully formed without even recognizing that there is that journey to learn and to experience and really shape what you know and how you express that.
Yeah, 100%. It's definitely a process.
I love that journey too, from, you know, going the road of visual communication, graphic design, because, you know, what did you learn on that journey that allowed you to then not be the starving artist?
Yeah. So being a graphic designer, you learn to listen to your clients. You're learning principles of design. You're learning how to communicate. And that's such an essential part in setting up your own business. You know, it's really important to communicate with your clients. It's important that you build and market yourself. It's not something I would have thought of as an artist, but it's such an essential skill once you start working towards establishing yourself as an independent illustrator, you know, and then also the process of working collaboratively across lots of different people, you know. So working in an ad agency, I worked as a graphic designer, and then I've also worked as an art director. And often you're not doing all the work. Maybe you come up with the idea, there's a graphic designer executing one part of it, there's an illustrator executing another part of it, and you're overseeing the process. And so you learn to collaborate with lots of people. And all those skills accumulated into me and has become a part of the illustrative practice that I have now.
That's really interesting. Love that. And I love that idea of working collaboratively. I can't even say it either. Collaboratively. And being able to, I think, learn all of the different roles to discover what you like best. Because is that where you started to see the possibilities for being an illustrator?
It's not that there wasn't a possibility. I knew it was there, but maybe the place wasn't right. And maybe the time wasn't right. So in India, it's still a very new field, let's say. Illustration was considered like a hobby, you know? You make art, it's beautiful, so, and you enjoy what you're doing. So why not do this for free? You know, that was the mindset behind it. And so coming to a place like Ireland where illustration has been established for years and there is a system and there's a process and there's value for what it brings to the table. And I think that allowed me then to transition into this space.
Which then comes back to that whole piece of culture, because if the culture doesn't inform what's possible, I mean, you're just treading water at that point.
Exactly. You could have all the amazing skills, but if the time is not right, or if it's not valued, and this is the big thing, if it's not valued, you're not going to be able to make a living off of it.
Wow. Did you have to train yourself to think of things in terms of value, or did that come naturally to you? Because I know for a lot of creative people, we struggle with value sometimes.
It was definitely a process. It wasn't like straight off the bat. I think a big part earlier on in the journey, because I was always an artist at heart, I had to learn the hard way to separate myself from my work, you know, because as a graphic designer, you know, if you're too attached to your work, it gets you into trouble because you will be told to make changes, to change mm-hmm. things. And like that vision you had in your head, you have to let it go because, you know, there's a greater value, there's a greater story, there's something deeper that's happening beyond your own likes and your own intuition, you know?
Mm, that's so true. I love that idea of separating yourself from your work too, because I mean, I think that's really the main part of the journey is you connect with a craft, you know, whether it's illustration or podcasting, and then you immerse yourself in it. And then you do the work to separate yourself from it so that you can have that separation like you're describing.
Yeah, I think it's such an essential part for any creative to learn to do this. Because obviously, when we're creating, we're so embalmed in the process, we're like deeply in it. It's our little baby that we're creating, you know? But, you know, the reality is, even as parents having children, you can love them, you can take care of them, but at some point you're going to have to step away because they have their own identity and they have their own purpose, and mm-hmm. you have to let them shine and you have to let them grow. And the same way with your own creative piece or whatever you work to make, it has a purpose. You're making it for a reason, and you have to allow that to unfold with mm-hmm. The information you gather from the critiques, from the conversations you have about it.
I'm loving this conversation so far, Ashwin, because it's really bringing an emphasis to a phrase that you use on your website, seriously playful. And so I'm curious how the tension between these two worlds spill out for you in your life and art.
The big thing is I like to tackle serious topics, you know, culture, it's such a big topic, justice, racism. You know, like all these deeper values, moral values that are a part of what drives this world. Mm-hmm. But how do you take it, how do you talk about it in a way that doesn't like point fingers, in a way that playfully pushes forward an idea so you start thinking about it versus rejecting it straight away? You know, mm-hmm. it's like if a bull was running towards you, you'd get out of the way. Whereas, hopefully. You know, yeah, hopefully, if you're quick enough.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas,
I hope I'm quick enough.
Yeah, if you saw like a peacock there, you know, playfully fluttering its feathers, maybe you'd go in closer. You want to have a look. You're curious about it. You're wondering, why is it so dazzling, or what's mm-hmm. so interesting about this? And you're slowly drawn into the story. And so I think that's where this juxtaposition happens, where the topics tend to be serious, but the approach tends to be playful.
What was the last story where it was a very serious topic, but you came at it from a playful way?
Last year, I self-published the book, What Wondrous Shapes We Are. The reason I created this book was I wanted to teach my children to have a positive body image, you know, with the media and the way culture is structured right now, there's a specific image of what is considered beautiful, what is considered okay versus what is not. And I wanted to have this conversation because when I was younger, I was teased for the color of my skin. And my wife, she had anorexia and bulimia. Mm-hmm. And those were tough things, and it was all related to this false sense of body image. Mm-hmm. And so with the book, I use these really playful characters, these funny shapes, to talk about the deeper message of, you know, we all come in many different shapes and sizes and colors, but in the end, we're all people. We're unique, different, and that's what makes us special.
See, that right there, I mean, that's a great example of just this world of positivity and possibilities. I love it.
I like that.
It's interesting. I know you from Diane Gibbs and Creatives Ignite. And I heard in your talk as part of Creatives Ignite that you're a child of missionaries.
Yes, that's correct.
That has to be a fascinating upbringing.
It was indeed. My dad is a missionary doctor, or was a missionary doctor, and their primary focus was in setting up community health in rural villages in North India. Wow. See, the infrastructure in India, in South India, is really good. There's great hospitals, but in North India, there's a lot of rural spaces. And so he was part of a project that worked to set up hospitals. And then obviously, then you have to staff it and then ensure that everybody who's brought into the system is cared for. And so my parents were a part of that. And so because of that, we moved around quite a lot. Like for the first 6 or 7 years of my life, we moved every 3 years.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of transition.
Yeah. It was interesting. But the great thing that this teaches you is adaptability, you know? Mm-hmm. You learn to make friends quickly. You learn to adapt to your environment. You learn to make the most of what you have, be thankful for what you have, and then appreciate when new and exciting things come your way.
Yeah. Did you learn anything about entrepreneurship and being an artist in that as well?
I don't know if it's consciously, maybe subconsciously, that ability to have faith and, you know, just take a step outside your comfort zone, because faith plays such an important role, because it allows us confidence, you know? Mm-hmm. Fear is the faith in the negative future, whereas when we step out in faith and take a risk, where we have faith in hope for a better future. And so I think that's an important part of entrepreneurship is learning to be willing to take risks, especially outside your comfort zone. I think the thing is, a lot of people assume that there is no risk, that the world is risk-free. But everything about life is risk. And it's just a question of risk mitigation, you know? Or choosing to take a risk that you like versus being forced into one that you don't necessarily want to be a part of.
I'm laughing because I remember I was having a conversation with a friend and we were talking about risk. And I said that I was a very risk-averse person. And he quickly responded, he said, "But you work for yourself. You're not risk averse." And I think that was a mind shift for me, where it shifted from risk aversion to risk mitigation, like you're saying.
100%.
Oh, that's interesting. I love the idea of faith helping you to move past fear, because one of the sticky notes that I have on my monitor is actually something that you said: fear steals our potential.
Yeah.
And just, I have to keep that around at all times, because when I feel that fear, you know, I don't want it to steal my potential.
Yeah, amazing. The thing is, a lot of us, we go through life full of fear, you know, lots of fear. And often it's not even real. It's not set in reality. It's imagined. We've built it up in our heads. And so it's an important process of learning, number one, that, you know, it's okay to have fear, but bravery is not being fearless. It's having the courage to step up and say no to your fear. Yeah. And the other part of it is actually separating out what is real from what is imagined.
Yeah. What is real and what's imagined. Because creative people, we have healthy, vibrant, alive imaginations. So everything is real to us.
Yeah. Yeah. It becomes, the imagined becomes more real than reality.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So how do you battle fear? How do you embrace bravery and move through that fear?
So one thing that I've found super helpful is actually writing down what you're feeling, you know? The problem is, we as human beings have very crowded mind spaces. There's so much going on. You're thinking about, like, if you're hungry, you have a project to do, you got client deadlines to meet, your kid is shouting in the background. There's so much information going on. And so everything is piling on top of each other. And by the process of sitting down and writing what you're feeling and categorizing what is real and what is your fears, it allows you to then clarify what's set in reality. And the second thing I do is I ask myself the question, what do I lose if I don't face this fear? And what do I gain if I do face this fear? And 99% of the time, you gain more than you lose by facing your fear.
I have to let that sit in. That's powerful. I love that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, that feels good. As you're describing the noise in your head and the noise that surrounds us, it reminds me of a phrase that I was fascinated with, chaos that makes sense. Because if there's a phrase that could best sum up what we're collectively searching for right now, I think it's that.
Yeah, making sense of chaos. We're born in a chaotic world, you know? If you think about it, there are three key things that every person is looking for. You know, number one is identity. Number two is purpose. And number three is community or acceptance.
How did you learn to embrace your identity? Because you have an identity, your brand is Wacko Chacko.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So how did you learn to embrace that wackiness and that weirdness and that awesomeness is what I'll call it.
So that's a funny story in itself, you know. So I went to an international boarding school when I was a kid, and growing up in this new environment, going from being a missionary kid to this international school, I was exposed to all these different cultures and all these different nationalities. And of course, growing up in the 90s, being a 90s kid, everybody was into hip hop and rap. And all the cool kids were into it. And right. So at the encouragement of the cool kids, I took to shaving my head and stealing my dad's t-shirt and wearing a bandana like Tupac. And so, like, when I think about it, that whole process was based on my own fear, my insecurity in who I was. I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be a part of the group. And there's nothing wrong with that. But when you base your life on somebody else's likes, and most of us, we're fickle, we change our minds constantly. And so you can't change who you are all the time just to fit into a peer group. It took me going on exchange when I was 15 years old to Australia, across the world. I was suddenly transported outside of this little boarding school bubble into the real world. And that was an eye-opener, you know? Suddenly I realized nobody really cares who you are or what you look like. And if you're going to allow people to dictate who you are, you're always going to be the slave to somebody else's ideas. And so that's where I made the decision. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to do what makes me happy, what I enjoy. And so when I came back to school, I came back wearing lots of different quirky clothes, things that I really enjoyed, you know? So I love waistcoats. And so I'd wear waistcoats with t-shirts and lots of ties and all kinds of quirky clothes. And because of that, I earned the moniker Wacko Chacko. And it's this realization, you know, it's only when you embrace what is weird, what is unique about you, that you free yourself to be who you were meant to be true, be you.
Yes.
When you realize that, it is so freeing, because the reality is there is nobody else like you. Mm-hmm. Nobody else has the same life experiences as you. And so now you're free to share your story, your perspective in the world. And that's how you'll be able to shape the world into a better place through your unique perspective.
Yes. I love that. And I love Be True, Be You. I just, when I look at that, it just fills me with, all right, just be you. But like for people who haven't been exposed to that message, it can be really hard to be true to themselves. So how do you encourage them to do that?
I think the big thing is learning to know who you are. And it's finding your identity in something, or anchoring your identity in something that is unshakable. And so for me personally, that is anchored in my faith, in my belief in God, and the fact that I am His son, mm-hmm. and I'm uniquely and wonderfully made in His image. And what that does is God is unshakable. He is faithful, and He has a unique perspective about me. And it brings me to this point where you think about it, you know, like when you create a new product, mm-hmm. some of us read the manual and others just jump into it, but we miss out on a lot of different features, right? Mm-hmm. But what if we were to go to the maker and read the manual that they created? Then you deeply understand what the purpose you're put on this earth for, and the identity and purpose are so interlinked, you know? And so for me, that unshakable truth is I'm in a son of God, and then He's called me to a specific purpose to bring joy and encouragement into this world.
Did you always know that that was your purpose, to be positive and to bring joy to the world?
No, that's something I've constantly been searching for, you know, trying to figure out what I was called to do. It was only last year when the pandemic hit, it gave me this pause moment to really sit and analyze myself and give myself the space to actually think about this, you know? And in that space of silence, I was able to begin to ask myself questions like, why do I do what I do? Mm-hmm. What is the purpose behind it? What is the impact I want to have in the world? What legacy do I want to leave behind? How do I want to be remembered? And, you know, looking at how God looks at me and then mm-hmm. at my own life and my kids, most purpose is deeply rooted in an emotion that you're truly drawn to. And for me, it's joy, joy and encouragement, because, you know, joy is not circumstantial, unlike happiness, you know. Happiness is based on if something happens, whereas joy comes bubbling out from within. And to me, I wanted to spread that, you know, to see people's lives changed and to be able to ignite that spark that gets them rolling on their own journey to see what exciting things they come out with.
You mentioned sitting in the silence to really discover, you know, what was going on inside, which speaks to the other side of all the noise that is in our head and surrounds us. How did you learn to get comfortable to be in that silent place?
This is where my introverted nature comes into play, because I would prefer, you know, like my own company over lots of company, you know?
Amen.
So I think it's a natural thing for me. It's not something I had to think about too much. I like to sit, I like to contemplate, I like to process. But I wasn't always good at processing, you know? I remember earlier when I was a teenager, I used to get really angry and it would start to bubble up, you know, like everything that happened to me would bubble and bubble and bubble. And then the silliest thing would happen. And it usually would be when I went down to see my family over the weekend away from boarding school, my brother would do something silly and then the top would explode. And it was unrelated to him, but I think being in a safe space allowed me to then just let myself loose. But through that process, I then learned to start journaling, and journaling allowed me to actually process that information rather than penting it up. And through that process, I learned to start thinking and taking the time to consider what's really going on inside.
Yeah, which is such a powerful part of creativity is really that internal check and perspective.
Yeah, 100%.
One of the things that I really resonate, I mean, I resonate with everything that you're saying, of course, but when I saw that you help unblock people's creativity, I got really excited because, you know, just the idea of unblocking things is great. And so I was wondering if there were a few blockbusters that get creativity flowing. I mean, you've mentioned journaling and reflection, but what are some other blockbusters that can unblock people's creativity?
So I actually have been using a system, and most recently I read the book, Sorry Spock, Emotions Drive Business by Adam Morgan. And that clarified for me a lot of the things that I was already doing. And I was able to put into words how I was overcoming my creative block. And so I break it down into the four D's for unlocking your creative block. So that's data, dots, distraction, and do. So the first one is data. So that is, you immerse yourself in information. So that's inspiring things. They could be TED Talks, they could be videos, books, comic books, whatever gets you inspired, whatever fills you with the information about that idea. Okay. And there, it's always helpful to have multiple sources of information.
Absolutely.
So you fill yourself with all this data. And then the second stage is connecting the dots. So you're making a conscious effort with your conscious mind. You're starting to connect the little ideas with all this data that you've gathered, you know, you're starting to clarify things. You're starting to see what's relevant to the idea. When you're doing this process of connecting dots, you're going to come to a certain stage where you can't go any further and you'll get stuck. Right. Yes. And this is where it's going to sound counter. This is not where you dig your heels in. This is actually where you walk away from the project. You distract yourself. And the reason you do this is because so far you've been using your conscious mind, which is your slow system. Now you want to allow your subconscious mind, your fast system, to take over. It's called a slow system because if you think about it, you know, our subconscious mind is allowing our heart to beat, our body to breathe, our organs to run, our whole bodies to move involuntarily. Even our mouth is moving based on our subconscious mind. Whereas the conscious mind, you have to slowly think through every idea and articulate what you're trying to say. And even then, half the time, we don't articulate ourselves well. So what happens when we allow ourselves to get into a relaxed state is our subconscious mind takes over and it starts to sort out the data that we've put in, all these connections that we made. We were sorting it out subconsciously. And this is why, you know, often when you're having a shower or you're going for a run, you'll suddenly have this eureka moment where you're like, oh, that's it. That's the idea. And it's because all the data has been sorted and you've made an essential connection that brings your idea together. And then, of course, once you have the idea, it's super important to jump straight into action, to clarify your hypothesis, to actually create motion. There is something really important about the action of doing that then allows the snowball effect to happen, where it gathers momentum over time, momentum and magnitude. And so that is my system to unlock creative blocks. So it's data, dots, distractions, and doing. And of course, within all of these, there are lots of smaller things you can do, like mind mapping, and those would be within each of these systems or stages within your creative process.
Yeah. From a high level, that's fantastic because not only do those four things connect, but they repeat. And I love how you said momentum and magnitude. I mean, that's how you build that compound interest effect in a sense through the continual doing of those things.
Yeah. That is something that a lot of creatives struggle with, is they don't actually start doing. They're so stuck in the imagination that they don't put pen to paper. And the thing is, a lot of the times, the idea can be clarified once you start the action of doing it.
Yeah, so true. Because sometimes, like, for myself, you know, I repeatedly do this show every week. And sometimes I don't know what I'm going to talk about. And so I have to go through the process of just starting to do the episode, which then reminds me of the data that I filled in, you know, my head with. And then I start connecting the dots. And then I usually go take a shower to distract myself to like find like the polish. And then I come back and do the recording. And so it's like, I love that kind of framework because it aligns for me what I do with this show.
Yeah, that's amazing to hear. I think like the important thing is learning or realizing the processes you do, because then you can repeat that action, you know, versus if you're unsure of the process or how you got to where you got, it takes you a lot longer to get to that same place again. Whereas if you understand your process, you can repeat it and you'll get faster each time.
You mentioned earlier, you know, growing up in the 90s that you were surrounded, you know, with hip hop and all that. Do you still listen to hip hop, or do you have a different soundtrack now that fuels your creativity?
Oh, I definitely do still listen to hip hop. I like old school rap, like Tribe Called Quest. Mm-hmm. But, you know, funnily enough, I don't really listen to that much music when I'm working. Mm. It's ironic, but yeah. I tend to watch TV series or cartoons in the background, and it's just because like I want the white noise that that occurs because of that. And then you're just zoned out working away. And then of course, when it comes to actually thinking of the idea, sometimes I just need silence so I can think clearly.
Yeah. Oh, I hear you. I got to ask, you know, what are the cartoons that you put on in the background?
It's like whatever series is on Netflix. I go through them at such a rapid pace. what are some of them? I just watched the new He-Man, which was so cool. It was like, it just took me back to my childhood, you know?
Yeah.
And then I watch a mix of anime and like some of the newer, the classic adult series like The Simpsons and Bob's Burger, Futurama, you know, like all of these are great to have in the background because you can just listen to the conversation and sort of zone out and do your work.
Yeah. You know what cartoon I love is the reimagined DuckTales. I just, that is a show that did it right.
Totally. I couldn't agree more. They did such a good job of the new version. I almost like the new version better than the old one.
Well, I do too, actually, because I went back and tried to watch some of the older cartoon from the 90s. I'm just like, I remember this being better as a kid. But as an adult, it's just like that whole new DuckTales is just, they handle nostalgia in a great way. I mean, they throw back to Darkwing Duck in a awesome way. Ooh, they do it right.
Yeah, 100%. I think a newer cartoon that does this really well is Gravity Falls. I don't know if you've come across it.
I haven't, no.
Oh, it's brilliant. It's about these like two kids and they end up living with their uncle over the summer holiday. And it's this weird place full of mysterious things that happen. Oh. And there's a fantastic mix of like nostalgia, mystery, comedy. I think you'll appreciate it. If you like DuckTales, you'd definitely appreciate it.
Ooh. Which streaming service is it on?
It's on Disney Plus.
Okay. All right. We have like everything now.
I know. Who watches TV anymore? It's just like streaming services.
We're not going to be cord cutters. We're going to get every cord. Have you seen Wolfwalkers at all?
No, not yet.
That's something that's on Apple Plus, and I haven't seen it yet. But I know that it's praised for its animation as well.
Yeah, I think it's made in Ireland, if I'm not wrong.
That's cool. Well, I could talk cartoons with you all day, but I don't want to take too much more of your time, actually. But, you know, you've shared so many interesting things in terms of, you know, the book about emotions and Spock and cartoons. But, you know, what book, podcast, or resource is blowing your mind right now?
So I recently picked up Makoto Fujimara's new book, Art Plus Faith. And it's really profound, like, mind-blowing stuff for me personally. And then, like I said, Sorry Spock, Emotions Drive Business was a real eye-opener. It's by Adam Morgan. Mm-hmm. And what podcasts? I've been listening to, you know, the Future podcast. So that's some great stuff on business and design. The Illustration Hour is a fantastic podcast. If you're interested in illustration, it's a series of interviews with professionals, and they talk through their journey, their struggles, and how they got where they got.
That's awesome. Well, Ashwin, this has been a pleasure to talk with you today. Thank you so much for just the way you show up in the world. It really does make the world a happier, more joyful place. And I'm only speaking for myself, but I know there's a lot of other people out there who just love your work. So thank you for being you.
Thank you so much, Chris. I really appreciate having the space to have these deeper conversations. They're so important to shaping the future we live in, especially having podcasts like this. So thanks for having me as a guest.
I hope you were encouraged by this conversation with Ashwin. Please be sure to visit his website to see how his calling of bringing joy and encouragement into this world is represented in his art. I have had the opportunity to read one of his books, and not only is the writing beautiful, but so is the artwork. Be sure to reach out to him and say hello. He truly is as nice and welcoming as he was on the show. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.